any orders?
I call a meeting to order, the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, introduction to town board.
Dennis Lowell.
Curtis Alexander.
Ernie Ferraro.
Olivia Valley.
Okay. Public comment. It's a period devoted to comments for the general public about items on the agenda. No discussion action. You'll be afforded the opportunity to speak on an individual basis. If you wish to speak about items within the jurisdiction not appearing on the agenda, you must wait until the comments by general public. Period listed in the agenda. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes. Please step up to speaker's podium. If applicable, clearly state your name and address, and please spell your name for the record. If any member of the board council wishes to extend the length of presentation, that will be done by the chair or the board council by majority vote. Okay, you have approval of the minutes for September 26, 2019.
So moved.
All second?
All second.
All right, motion's passed. Approval of agenda for January 30th, 2020.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion carries. Information items. Receive a report from Metro.
Good evening, everyone. Matt Marlowe, Sergeant with Las Vegas Metro in Mount Charleston, Indian Springs area. In the last reporting period, we responded to... Now, the calls for service... We responded to 19 calls for service up here on the mountain. That doesn't include all the traffic stuff that happened during Christmas. And we issued 35 citations and made one arrest. Again, that doesn't reflect all the sites that were given during the snow time. It would be about triple that.
So, did you say 19?
19 calls for service, yeah. Nice hair, by the way.
It looked way better this morning. It's been a long day.
Thank you.
You too. You always have the best hairstyle.
I bet it's much quicker than mine.
So as you can see, we the DUI memorial signs have been taken down. Those we're going to be adding. I think there's about 8 more names will be added for next year, unfortunately. And they're just going to continue to stream down the highway in December, as you know, is DUI memorial month. Other than that, I'm just waiting for some more snow. I know this can't be it.
Bunch more.
And that's all I have to report. Are there any questions of me?
What's that? Not too bad.
Yes, sir.
Matt, a couple of days ago on Harris Springs Road, I saw about 67 police cruisers there. It may have been closer to seven. Can you tell us what happened there?
67.
I think it was 627.
Old 67. Was that during the day?
It was in the morning. Looks like he had every cruiser.
So what we did was, in light of the fact that we've got some new folks that have joined us on the mountain, new officers that I've introduced to you over the last year, some folks aren't familiar with the use of the winches and the towing capabilities that we have, or using straps to pull people that are stuck. So we had a gentleman from an off-road, the largest Southern Nevada off-road club, come up here and give us instruction, certification on the use of the truck winch and the use of straps so that we can effectively and properly pull people from.
I was hoping your answer would be more exciting than that.
No.
They got stuck.
Ernie?
Just like to report, I forget what night it was, about 2 weeks ago, I'm coming up the hill at 7 o'clock and there's a dead burro in the road and I ran over the back of it, but the ladies had stopped who hit it. I don't remember the name of the highway patrolman that was there. I was sorry. But it was John from your staff, and he did an excellent job of putting a strap on it and pulling it off the road.
Oh.
So anyway.
It's good to hear that John's doing good work.
Or
he didn't even have the winching strapping class by then. So maybe he didn't even need your class, I guess. I don't know.
No, just a thumbs up for Metro and Highway Patrol.
That's something that won't happen in town.
True.
No, because I just had to help assist with the winch last night with Metro, getting a burro off the road out by Red Rock, which is pretty close to town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yes, I did assist with that.
Well done.
Good girl.
Wow. Ryan?
And no training. Just like, no.
It's because you have your own.
Oh, no, this was on the Metro truck.
just something I've observed, general improvements over the last couple of years between Metro and the Metro volunteers and checking whether people have four-wheel drive before allowing them past the roundabout or in some cases past Harris Springs, making sure that they're off the beyond the white line, you know, if they're parking up here after snow, and making it a little easier to get around in general, I've noticed this year than in previous years. So, thank you.
Cool. Hopefully what we're doing works. The unfortunate thing is, in a way, is that the city has grown to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing's changed up here as far as parking or availability of equipment. So we're dealing with last year. I haven't got the numbers, the counts yet for traffic. Last Christmas Day, there was 2,500 cars that came up, just Kyle came up. I think that this year it seemed busier on Christmas Day. So I'm waiting. When I get those numbers, I'll put them out. But I suspect it's closer to 3,000. And it just becomes easier and easier to come up here because the city grows out to us.
The roundabout, everyone was kind of joking about the roundabout. Like, why did they do that? It actually works during a bad storm. The cop just pulls there and blocks the road, and he makes you circle around if you're a local, and then pulls back, lets you through.
Yeah, we like that. It works really well.
It works.
It slows people down.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Somebody went right through it.
Somebody went through the sign that's still smashed on there. And then the day we got that little inch of snow, was that yesterday, 2 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody slid right off into that ditch.
Yep.
That snow on
solid
car. Anyone else? Yes.
I'm just curious, what happened with that call, that vehicle? Did you find out about it? It was gone after I called you about the vehicle that had slammed into the hillside and then was vandalized. They broke all the windows out and the lights were left on. The engine wasn't running. There was no person around, no blood around. But it was just, after I spoke to you, you said you'd have someone take a look at it, and the next morning it was gone.
Yeah, my guys were in Indian Springs, so I went down there to take a look at it. And by the time I got down there, it was gone.
Oh.
And that was that evening. So I don't know what the story was on it.
Okay.
Just keep in mind, too, if you can, it doesn't put you in any danger. If you can log a license plate on anything that's
there was no plates on it. No.
I just wanted to say, you're right, there was no plates on that. Just for future reference in anything in your neighborhoods. It really helps us when we have a plate, especially if it's gone by the time we get out there and it still comes up some follow-up. But in that instance, there wasn't anything to do, and it was gone by the time I got there. So thanks for the call, though, and keep those coming.
That was at the roundabout? No, it's about halfway.
Hey, Matt?
About at the 12, down to the 12-mile mark. Yes, sir.
I don't have your phone number, but I have your email as m6204m@lvmpd.com. That's still good?
That's still good. I'll give you the cell phone number.
Would you?
You should have it. 702-289-5650.
Thank you.
289-5650.
Perfect. Okay. Anybody else? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Okay, receive a report from Mount Charleston Fire District.
George Gonzalez, Mount Charleston Fire Protection District Fire Chief.
Dave Martin.
good evening. Thanks for your cooperation the last couple months. I'm just going to throw out some numbers as far as our call volume. Just for December alone, we had 50 calls in the month of December. And I'll break it down further. From December 20th to January 5th, we performed 44 calls for service in that two-week period, which is the school winter break, 44 calls for service. And that's between our paid staff, our volunteers, and we had assistance for Medic West units in Lee Canyon. It's just so you get an idea of the call volume that we get up here in that time frame. For the month of January until today, we have 30 calls for service. This is our busy time right now. Medical calls, vehicle accidents, snow play accidents. So keep that in mind. Next thing, just a couple announcements. We do have June 6th Pine Needle event that we are gonna start working on. I will reach out to some of those community members for some assistance. As always, I appreciate it very much. And we'll be doing some announcements and hopefully post it on the website and all the reports and the library and everything like that. Any help that we can get from the community and any other agencies during that day is much appreciated to help prevent the spread of wildfire, help your fellow neighbor and make sure that we can clean up and that defensible space properly. Other than that, I'll turn it over to Chief.
All I have May 1st is the annual volunteer banquet. So if you can save that date, it's a Friday night at the lodge. So I don't have anything else. Any questions? May 1st?
May 1st.
Fundraiser, silent auction, what's going on?
Yes.
Same old, same old.
Ask
the boss. Okay.
My entertainment coordinator.
Events coordinator.
Just told the date, right?
Any other questions for the fire, sir?
So what's the theme this year?
May Day.
Good. Okay. Is that in like the emergency call or the round the pole?
No, around the pole.
Oh, around the pole. Just to be sure, I didn't want to show up on
emergency call. The emergency call is after really bad things.
Yeah, Mayday.
No, Mayday, where it came from is okay. Not very nice.
Oh.
So
okay.
People were really worried when I chose Mayday.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Chief. Receive a report from the Las Vegas Valley Water District.
Good evening, Jason Bailey with the Las Vegas Valley Water District. With the report for the month of January, a lot of this data and information is kind of at the end of calendar year 2019, of December 31st. The Echo Wells 3, 4, and 5 have just passed over into what we deem our concerned range. The Rainbow Well is still in the sustainable range. However, we're not too concerned once the snow melts. Those three wells will tick back up into the sustainable range. Just for more detail, all the wells are at higher levels this time right now compared to this time last year. For calendar year 2019, as we all know, it was a very wet year. The Cal Canyon Gauge had the highest precipitation amount of nearly 26 inches. That's the highest in the 20-year data collection record for that site. December was down pretty low, just 0.1 inches of precipitation. But the year-to-date precipitation, it was 176% of the 19-year average. So a good wet year, the system is healthy, and once all the snow melts, it'll be even better.
Bless you.
That's my report.
Must be his birthday.
Any questions from the board?
You guys have coronavirus.
I had a corona. I didn't catch the virus.
Thank you, sir. Receive a report from Metro Volunteers.
Good evening, Donna Thompson.
Hello, Donna.
Hello. Your volunteers were out for 140 hours in the month of December. That's approximately 35 shifts. I think most of all, I want to express to the community thank you for your support, your encouragement, your waves, and your smiles. It does make a difference when you're freezing.
Yes.
So that's all I have.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fine job,
they all
did.
They did. Thank you.
Yes.
Receive a report from Nevada Highway Patrol.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sergeant Reimer with NHP. Pretty much, I just want to go over our crash numbers really for January and December on the mountain. So we had 11 total in December, 7 of those were on the mountain. So far, we've had 12 in January, and 5 of those are also on the mountain. In December, we had one horse was hit and struck on 158, about a mile in from Cow Canyon. And so far this month, we've had 3 burros killed so far. 2 were killed last night and one crash. Both were marker 14 on Cow Canyon, and the 2 were on marker 13. So heads up in that area for, I don't know how many are left, but that seems to be where they'd like to be on the road, so.
That's a little above Harris?
Yeah.
No, 14 is
right about
down the
when you pop out of the wash,
yes.
Going down?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, is that where that I saw the
all the blood in the street?
Yeah.
Mm.
There was 2 there, and then the one was, I think the one you're talking about was a mile down the road.
Yep.
Further down. So, as far as upcoming events, well, we have NASCAR in town, but then for up here is the marathon, annual marathon is April 4th. That's a Saturday.
They'll be here next month to talk about it.
Okay. And it's a different person this year than last year. Alec has gone somewhere else.
Cindy. Her name is Cindy. And she's coming down at the end of the February.
Whatever day the 4th is, it was a Saturday, but... Okay. The 4th is the date of the actual marathon, so early morning, so unless you want to get caught up in the traffic, stay home or find someone else to do that day, I guess. And that's all I have for NHB. Any questions for me? Yes.
You're responsible for the area down 95 coming northbound. I drive that every day, coming north, and the new off-ramp at Elkhorn, this is a law question. It says HOV off-ramp. Does that mean I can't take it if there's only me in the car?
Technically, yes, but...
Well, I'm offended.
Even just for the buses, because of the transfer station is right there for the buses, but even they have to cross the solid line, which technically is illegal also.
Right.
So, and then the lines are the signs, the DMS boards say, you know, cross the double line, pay the fine. Well, technically, it's not a double line, it's a single line. So, me personally, I wouldn't, because it's about the only way you can get off that exit.
Right. It's the only way.
Yes.
Okay, so I only want to say it because it's confusing. That's all.
I've been asked several times about that.
Okay.
So the technical answer is by the book, you know you're not supposed to cross the line to take that HOV lane by yourself.
Okay, but if you see me and I'm at the signal light, you're not going to ticket me.
They're going to be waiting for you.
It's all about me.
Don't ask the question if you don't want to know the answer.
You know, this is recording.
Just messed it up for everybody. Thanks, Ernie.
That was Ernie.
But actually, as far as we don't patrol, we don't start until technically at Kyle Canyon.
Okay.
That's our district boundary, but we actually go between there and stuff. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No. Well, thank you very much.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Okay, United States Forest Service.
Good evening, Deb McNeil, area manager for the Spring Mountains National Recreation Area. And I can two more months say I'm the new one, right? Then I'm the old one. So a couple updates. One thing, because we haven't met in a few months, we did the firewood sale, as I told you we were going to. We did it in the Barrowkip pits at Kyle and in Lee, as well as in the Kyle Recreation Residences down by Rainbow. So we did send letters to all the residents there, well, they're not permanent residents, but the folks who own the cabins, and we were able to get some fuel off the ground, and then we're hoping to do that in the future and include the rec residences in Lee Canyon as well, and maybe open up some other areas. We just kind of wanted to take it a little slow. We did the sales in our office down in Las Vegas, because our internet is iffy at the visitor center, but we are hoping next year to be able to do it in both locations and not have it be you have to come one day, and it's only one day. We did open it up this year two different weeks, for two different periods of weeks, and we do still have a lot of firewood in the pits, so we will be doing more, but they probably won't be till next fall.
Can we do them earlier than the first week of December?
Well, I'm hoping, yes, because it was a little late this year, especially with all the early snow falling. We had three different people in that one position. It's been a little challenging. But we're hoping to get healthy. The ski area final EIS, I briefed this in September because I knew it was coming, but I didn't know the exact date, and then we didn't have that meeting, but it did go out for objection period, is the process it's called. That ended on December 20th. And then the Forest Service is going through those objections now, and a final EIS and a record of decision will get signed at some point in the future, and I don't know what those decisions will be yet. That's actually my boss that makes that decision. But when it does go out, it'll be published in the Federal Register in probably, I'm guessing, a couple more weeks. We do have a new fire management officer. Used to be here as the assistant fire management officer. It's Marty Woods, and he is back. He's been here on detail for about 3 months, and we're going to keep him permanent. Doing a great job. So he should start sometime in April. He'll be here kind of off and on for the next few months, but he's coming back down from Sparks, and he's going to move. So we're very happy to have him and get him down before fire season. Then one other thing, just kind of as an FYI, we are doing what we call a prospectus, and it's going to go out to the public hopefully in another month, and it is to ask, we get requests sometimes for special events. The marathon is an example, or somebody wants to do the Bluegrass Festival at the Visitor Center. They might want to do other types of concessions or outfitter and guide. If you think Red Rock, the Pink Jeep Tours is a outfitter guide concession type thing. We've had those requests, and the forest had more interest the last time it went out a couple of years ago. And so they said, we'll do a prospectus, and we haven't. It just was on the back burner, so it is being done, and I'm committed to get that out. That doesn't mean that what's in there is going to get applied for, and it doesn't mean what they apply for is going to get permitted. But we're trying to give ideas of the types of things that would be legal, a guided hike, etc. And so when you see that prospectus, that's going to go to local businesses, of course, and then we will evaluate it. But the goal of that is to have guided and permitted activities on existing Forest Service roads, trails, and facilities. So the visitor center, picnic areas, hikes on trails, and maybe to get, and shuttles is one of the things that we're saying, if people want to bid and get a permit for that, that might help with the
traffic
congestion, those kinds of things. So if somebody wants to do it, carpooling, other types of stuff. So we will be taking it slow, but we do want to get that out there and let folks know and fulfill our commitment to allowing businesses a process to go do those kinds of events. And more will follow. When that comes out, I'll make sure I get a copy to you guys. It'll have like a 30 or 45 day application process where they bring it in, and then we'll evaluate them. And that's all I have.
Okay, any questions?
Good.
I just wanted to say thank you for getting the extra law enforcement over winter break. They did a lot of work. They helped keep the roads clear and the chaos slightly less.
Thank you. Yeah, we had our two rangers, and two came in from out of town, one from Alaska and one from Utah, and we're here for 14 straight days on 12 to 14 hour days. So they did an amazing job.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
On shuttles, the shuttles work in small communities like this? Are they profitable? I mean, do they actually bring in companies that want to do that?
We don't know, and we don't evaluate their business plans per se. When they bring in an operating plan, we don't know if they're going to be profitable or not. That ability exists now for somebody to bring in a permit, but there was what we call competitive interest when they did a kind of an announcement a couple years ago, and so because there was more interest and we needed to compete on multiple applications, they thought it was best to do this prospectus. So we will see. And the way the process works, you issue a permit for like a trial 2-year period, because it could end at any time if they're not in compliance. And then if it goes well, then you can issue a longer permit.
And that would all be conducted in your parking lot, right?
It'll be all on Forest Service lands. If they have something that needs to be an NDOT right-of-way, or say they want an event that's going to come and be allowed in Montana Forest or whatever, they have to get permissions from all the agencies. But one of the suggestions at the Winter Alliance is we don't have anybody that puts chains on or sells chains on the mountain. So that's a possibility. A food truck might be nice at the Visitor Center. That kind of a motorist assist towing on Forest Service roads and other things, somebody that has a contract, and then George and Matt and
NHB.
Thank you. Reimer, I was going to call you Reimer. I'm like, Gerald, right? Call. So that it's, you know, so that actually has a contract and would maybe respond up here. So we're just kind of opening it up to see what the interest is, and hopefully it'll bring things that we need and that will serve the public up here.
I just have a comment to add on to that, because when the effort to mention this past winter, we had an issue with our tow services that we go through. It goes to we call a company that dispatches a tow out there. During these storms, they would not come out. So
Thanksgiving.
That would help us.
Thanksgiving.
Too.
Yep.
Thanksgiving, whenever it's storms, they don't have the equipment to get up here, or they just wouldn't come at all.
And they may not. Somebody might not. But if we put put it out there and say these are some of the types of services that might be needed, the hope is that maybe somebody goes, oh, I could do that.
And then we'll see. If somebody could come up with an idea of maybe reducing the traffic and getting them to take paint jeep tours, I'm all for it, especially on the weekends. If something could be done, that'd be great.
Well, and responsible use and permitted use tends to lead, so permit somebody who has a permit to go out and lead a hike of 25 people is going to say, hey, that person doesn't have a permit. So they also want to make sure that the trails and trailheads are there. It will bring in some revenue, not a ton, but a little bit. It's 3 to 5% would stay on the forest and would come to this district, which then would hopefully lead for us to be able to hire trail staff and other people. So
something else possibly too, because we have a lot of individuals that come up here and do whatever the hell they want. Maybe the Pink Jeep Tours could emphasize, well, I don't, this is not something that we do, of course, probably, but could emphasize, be nice, you know, don't leave trash around, don't mess up.
Well, you know, a lot of the grants we've given through the license plate program, we've got companies that are promoting that. Mm-hmm. And I just have to ask you a question. It seems to me if you get the commercial tours up here, they're going to go down and get the tourists, and we're actually going to get more congestion.
It depends on the user group, obviously, and they're going to tailor. All of our permits will require them to have a certification in Leave No Trace principles.
Yes.
So part of their permit responsibility is responsible use of the land. So, and you know, the other thing is to try to disperse the recreation and maybe have some of those be, you know, we're not going to send all of the tours up to Mary Jane Falls on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
It's just, but, you know, but so my, there's going to be a capacity.
I've been to cities that have the Pink Jeep tours, and yes, they cater to the tourists, and it would increase our traffic up here. It wouldn't decrease it; it would increase it.
Okay.
It depends. We're hoping to make responsible use and figure out how to just, because as you pointed out somebody earlier, so rightfully, the community is right here, and they're coming. They live here, they play here, and they're coming. And so, the idea is how do we make sure that it gets done with some Forest Service oversight and engagement and responsibility, and then hopefully provide some more people up here to help manage that on the trails, et cetera, instead of all of us just relying on volunteers. So we will take it slow.
So that, if you gave these companies literature and spiels to talk to these hikers and stuff like that, going up, they would be obligated to follow.
Yeah.
Well, the hikers and their groups, I'm sure, would do that, but the general public is still going to be the general public.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to have any impact. I think it's just going to make more congestion because it's going to give them the right to bring strip tourists up here. That's just my first take on it.
Okay. I didn't look at it that way.
Yeah. Well, if you ever go to Sedona and you rent a Jeep and go independently, you have the Pink Jeep tours are all over the trails, all over there.
Okay, I wasn't aware.
So to me, it would just make it extremely congested up here.
Okay.
You were
well, that's an eye opener.
Yeah. Well, go to Sedona, rent a Jeep.
I kind of disagree. I think that the permitting process has like a passive surveillance mechanism by which those people who have permits would want to make sure that everybody complies with those rules. And yeah, it might be more congested, but we're not going to be able to stop that.
And we're not going to issue 50 permits for different,
right.
I mean, so again, we're going to take it slow, just like we did with firewood permits. So. And when you have it, a little more.
I got two questions. Any updates on the CenturyLink issue and online and repayment?
Yes. So we are working on an application from CenturyLink to move their line out of Camp Foxtail, which is Girls' Dream Camp, into Camp Lee, which is the historic site that the county runs for the Forest Service. We are hoping to get the biological opinion from Fish and Wildlife. They're going to go ahead and just issue us a decision in a couple weeks, regardless of the snow, since we don't have snow. And then we're hoping to be able to make, but we did get SHPO concurrence on stuff. So it's moving, and Fish and Wildlife is working with us through the NEPA and biological opinion process for butterflies on Foxtail Ridge. So
Thank you. We keep you here all night.
No, please don't.
How much money do you have in your budget for taking out downed trees or maybe cutting down the dead trees that are left about 20 foot high so woodpeckers have a place to peck because there's not enough trees left in the forest? That's the rumor I heard, just to be a smartass about it.
That's because they're going to take them down, but there's not enough trees for woodpeckers to peck?
Well, how much wood could a woodpecker peck?
My question is, we get money for license plates, and I hear we have to give it to a nonprofit to process through. So if we can't find a nonprofit to say, hey, we'll give you $50,000 or $100,000, and we'd like you to clean up all the dead wood in the view corridor coming up from Harris Springs up on both, on Lee Canyon also, do you have funds to augment that? We come to you and say, we've got $100,000 to hire a contractor. Do you have $100,000 to put in the deal?
It depends on the purpose. So if it's a fuels treatment, it comes out of one thing, which is kind of fire prevention. We are doing a couple projects that I'll brief on as we get into scoping, like next month, that are habitat restoration and improvement. One is in Max. It's one of them, we call it MCL. It's Max Champion and Level Canyon areas. And so we're going to be going in and doing some thinning and possibly some understory burn. We're just starting the NEPA process on that. For hazard trees along the highway, NDOT already has a project along 156, 157, 158 that we approved a couple years ago that if it's in the right of way, they will clear those hazard trees. They just are still working on it. It takes time for them to get through it. So that'll help a little bit. And then we can certainly look at if it's forest health type things to try to get a grant and or funding to do that.
Okay.
If it's a hazard tree that's dead tree that's going to harm a picnic area or you think it's going to harm your residents, depending on whether it's on forest land or not or what the structure harmed is, we give permission to the water district to cut some trees down. They pay a company to come in and cut trees down that were dead or posing a hazard, and of course NV Energy can refund their maintenance under their lines. So there's different ways, different types of categories for trees to be cut. But we don't usually do it just for the beautification or view shed per se, but it might be for forest health.
Okay.
One question from, in respect from, this is something that happened, I believe, in October. They planted a bunch of trees?
Yeah, we planted almost 1,300 trees in Kyle Canyon. We have 1,300 more coming that we're going to plant in McWilliams in the spring. We're working actually with the ski area and SNC to find a date.
I've got a question. Why are we planting them in the places where we just took trees out 5 or 6 years ago?
Because they were, it's all about forest health. So you try to plant trees periodically. These were pinyon junipers or pinyon ponderosa pines.
Ponderosa.
Think about which one it is. I'm not a tree expert. We have seeds that we grew out at the nursery, and so of course it cost us to do that. It was about $4,000 for the forest to get the trees, which is actually not a bad deal. And then we had a couple hundred volunteers to plant them. And then we're also looking to do a project to collect new seeds to get someone who actually goes up and collects the cones so we can have newer seeds. But our goal is to try to plant twice a year. And right now, because there's so many that have had to be cut because they've died or posed a threat in the developed campgrounds, that's been our first priority, I guess.
Okay. Are you going after the burn area? Burn areas?
We did plant in the burn area in Harris Springs also, and that has come back quite a bit. We are hoping that Friends of Nevada Wilderness will be able to finish the Griffith Peak Trailhead restoration. That's the last section that hasn't been restored. But if you drive up there, it's no longer a closure area. Closure expired in January of 2019. And it looks pretty good. It's coming back naturally pretty well.
The trailhead's open for hiking?
I wouldn't hike Griffith Peak Trail, the upper peak, when you take the Harris Springs Road and go all the way up to that cherry stem in the wilderness. That trail is not completed yet. They weren't able to do it. We had snow so late, and it was like August, and there was still snow. But they're hoping to have it finished. That's through a nonprofit, Friends of Nevada Wilderness, has a grant to do that.
Cool.
And that's been
good. Debbie, you mentioned the Bluegrass Festival. Did you get any feedback from the organizers as to how successful that was?
a little bit, and we're in discussions with them on some things we can do better, making sure we know whose responsibility it was for cleaning the Forest Service restrooms, et cetera. Was it theirs? Was it ours, et cetera? So just a few lessons learned, but overall, I think they're interested in coming back.
We went there. I didn't think it was very well attended.
I don't think it was either, and frankly, I don't think they knew how to promote it, and we didn't want too big of an event either. I think we maxed it at 500 people. Again, trying to make sure we don't over capacity something, taking little baby steps.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much. Receive a report from the Nevada Department of Transportation regarding road conditions, construction updates. Okay, guess we don't have anybody for that. Receive a report from Nevada Energy, PSOM updates, whatever that is. Introduce fire mitigation specialist Mark Reagan. So my first question is, what is PSOM?
Public Safety Outage Management.
Thank you.
So for the record, Josh Langan, MB Energy, Director of Grid Reliability and Operations. So with me, I have a couple colleagues from MB Energy, and maybe I'll just ask them to introduce themselves.
Yeah, Gilbert Dominguez with Government Affairs.
Angel Williams, Community Relations Manager.
I'm Mark Regan, I'm a Fire Mitigation Specialist.
So in a moment, I'll ask Mark to kind of come up and talk a little bit, introduce himself, and then kind of discuss some of his background and also touch on PSOM, Public Safety Outage Management. I'll certainly talk on that. And then, of course, we have an event coming up this Monday that we want to talk about, and we have some flyers to pass out. And certainly that event will provide more opportunity to get really an in-depth review of what our plan is. And then also there's going to be a lot of time for questions and answers so we could go into detail. So to kind of rewind, it's surprisingly been a year. The first time I came up here was about a year ago. At that time, there was Senate Bill 329 that was kind of floating out there. And that was essentially what that is it's a natural disaster mitigation. And what that required is utilities to look at all kinds of natural disasters and evaluate that risk and then put together a holistic plan to really address the risk associated with all these natural disasters. So we've always had mitigation plans. They've been kind of separate depending on, but this is really a holistic plan that will be provided out to all stakeholders. We've had a lot of stakeholder involvement in the process. And really this one plan will address everything from wildfires, it could be floods, high winds, monsoons in the valley, snowstorms, blizzards, you know, in some areas in northern Nevada. So when I came a year ago, really the big focus that we were looking at is risk of wildfire. You know, this is on the heels of some of the big wildfires in California, of course, so that really changed our view on the risk associated with wildfires, of course. Over the last few decades, that risk profile has increased as well because of climate change. Certainly, the amount of acres burned in the western part of the U.S. has gone up quite drastically in that time. So we prioritized our risk, looked at it a little bit differently. And what a lot of utilities were doing as a very last resort, they would eventually de-energize power in these areas if the risk got too high. And really, one thing that increases that risk quite drastically beyond the fuels and how dry the fuels and flammable the fuels are is the wind speed. So you've seen some utilities in California when wind speeds are forecasted to get, you know, higher 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, they will de-energize proactively just to eliminate the risk of potentially some vegetation or some debris coming into one of their lines or perhaps even some of their infrastructure being blown over and being the cause of a wildfire. So we looked at that here. We spent a lot of time and effort evaluating our risk. We developed a risk model that looks at the fuel here. It looks at fire weather indexes. It looks at also the condition of our infrastructure. And we established basically a criteria of when we would elect to de-energize and how we would go about that. So that's what PSOM is, Public Safety Outage Management. Really, this risk, because of the increase, the whole goal of it was for safety of the community here, safety of our employees, of course, the forest, So really, that if you think about it, in developing the model to establish the risk and perhaps even conditions as a last resort to de-energize, we also proactively looked at all our lines in this area, all our infrastructure. So about, you know, spring of last year, 2019, we've had crews up here pretty much the entire year. So what we did to mitigate our risk is we went pole by pole anywhere we couldn't get a bucket up and inspect every piece of hardware, every component on our lines and poles. We had our linemen climbing up the poles and doing these inspections. In addition to that, we brought some experts that did a lot of inspections in California, and kind of as a two-pronged approach, we also invited them and partnered with them to do these inspections as well. So we took all the findings from those inspections, and over about the last eight months up until the end of October, we've had crews up here mitigating some of those findings. So those include everything from, you know, installing bird guards, looking at the vegetation around our lines, looking at our right-of-ways, changing out components. One of the big fire risks are fuses. So fuses provide protection to the electrical system if something gets in it, but they're expulsion devices. They could expel hot metal that could be a source for a fire. So we looked at even those, and we've upgraded those to fuses that actually don't have that risk. So we've done a lot. And really the cherry on top was at the end of October. We had about a seven and a half, 8 hour outage up here. The last time we were up here at this meeting was in September. We talked about that. That outage was very successful. A couple of things we found in those inspections were parts of our distribution lines coming up here. These are stranded distribution lines, and in some areas, they were starting to unravel or strands were coming apart. So we identified those as high-risk items that we needed an outage to take care of. When we were down, we also took the opportunity to change out some insulators that were old, some equipment that was old, install like bird guards. That is also one source of risk for us as far as wildfire. And we just did a lot of work. The other thing I'll mention on all our infrastructure and all our lines, we have wires above our electrical conductors. So, right, if there's lightning, that lightning will impact the power in this area. That lightning could be distributed to ground and not cause a wildfire. So there was a lot of areas within our lines where that just needed some attention. So that was another big thing we focused on. So, you know, since that outage in October, that was really a good opportunity to also evaluate, you know, our posture as far as if we ever had to de-energize as a last resort. You know, we definitely did a lot of due diligence looking at what generators we need, what areas we need, getting generators spec for wells, so on and so forth, the community, the school. And that went very well. We did find some issues with some of the communication, so certainly those are things we're still working on and we shored up. So if we ever have to de-energize, at least all these items will be addressed, and we'll have communications, we'll have comfort centers or places where we could all go and kind of muster. But long story short, because of all the work we've done, you know, that's really reduced our risk. Ultimately, that is our last resort. We don't want to de-energize the community here. So the work we did last year really reduces that risk going forward. So with that, I think I'll introduce Mark Regan, and then we could get into questions, certainly. Absolutely. Mark?
Well, I'm excited to be here. A little bit about myself. I retired from the fire districts up north. I had 30 years experience, but I spent some time down here in Mount Charleston. So some of you guys might remember me. I was 95, 96 down here, worked out of that station, worked calls, and it was a one-man show, and we dispatched and responded to the calls and came back and listened to the tape and see how it went. So a lot of things have changed, and so I'm excited to be part of NV Energy now. Like Josh went into, I was brought on to help implement the disaster plan that we're developing. The last couple of months we've been working on it. It's due in front of the Public Utility Commission March 1st. And then it'll be a living document where we'll be doing a yearly update to it. And then we'll we resubmit every 3 years to the plan. We had a lot of input from the stakeholders. We have a list of over 150 people that are experts in from the fire districts to telecom communications, emergency managers, tribal, U.S. Forest Service, BLM, state of Nevada, all sitting down in the room statewide developing this plan. And so we got all their input, we're putting it into the plan. Now we're on to the second phase, which is the public input. We've already held a couple of public meetings up north, one out in Elko this week, and next week we'll be holding some more down here in Las Vegas and then back up north. So the meeting for Mount Charleston is on Monday, and it's going to be at the retreat, and we have some flyers that we have in the back I'll hand out. So your public input is really important. We're going to go through the plan, the basic top parts of the plan on how we're going to be going and mitigating if there was a disaster, and also how to, Josh hit on some of the points already, how we're hardening our structure, infrastructure, and some of the fuels mitigation work we're going to be doing, and some of the new technology out there that we're going to be implementing into this plan. And so it's really important to get the public input, so I hope to see everyone here, there, and bring your neighbors and friends, and then we'll. All, if you can't make Monday, we're going to have another one down in the valley at the East Las Vegas Library, East Bonanza, and we'll be holding a meeting down there. So if you can't make Monday, we'll be on Tuesday down there. And also, it's on our website, our nvng.com website. It is the PowerPoint presentation that we go through, and so if you miss something during the presentation or you can't make it to, you can review that, and you can also submit public comments on the website, and also we'll have forms at the meeting where you can review and submit public comments and stuff. And we look at every single public comment, and we will be submitting every single public comment to the Public Utility Commission. I'm really excited about it. It's bringing the whole state of Nevada together. It's a partnership. We're enhancing all of our partnerships. We're going to be doing a lot of positive things. We took action before the plan's even approved. Josh went through the whole list. We didn't wait for the plan to get approved. We already took action, and we already made a lot of these changes. But it's a big state, and we're going to be doing that across the state. 90% of the state is we provide power to 90% of the state. So that's we're going to be covering a lot of ground. Any questions?
Yeah, Mark. I'm Don Hamm. I live on this street right over here, Yellow Pine. There was a discussion in the last meetings that we had on this topic of putting power lines underground in all the residential areas. Is that still going
to
happen?
Part of this plan, we have to analyze every option of what's the best practice. For the best cost, for the cost. So yeah, we could underground everything. That's going to take us about 25 years to do and billions of dollars. So this plan will look at each section and, okay, is it better to underground this section? What's the cost? And what is? It's a whole, they analyze, and we have experts. We hired experts from internal and external that will analyze it, and the Public Utility Commission. So certain areas we will be undergrounding. Other areas we won't be underground just because of cost and the time frame. And our goal with this plan is to keep everyone's bills where they're sitting. As you have noticed, some of the bills have gone down because the same team that was able to go towards the renewable energy component, we're able to, the concern is all the rates were going to go up. Well, we were able to, the last 10 years, move towards renewable energy and bring your bills down. And this plan, with everything we're gonna do, that's our same goal, is to submit this plan and keep everyone's bills where they're sitting. So we're going to be looking at that. If there's a cost benefit, then we will underground. If it's too expensive, then we'll go look at other avenues to improve the line.
Yeah, my recollection of the conversations that we had was it was gonna happen. Just the timing was the question. It wasn't 25 years, it was 3 years.
Well, the 25 years to do the whole state. Yeah, if we underground everything, it would take us that time on that. Yeah, so we're going to, like I said, certain areas we're going to analyze and see if the cost benefit in that section would to underground. And so this area here, and we submit the plan to the Public Utility Commission, and they could have a comment where they choose, with the going back and forth, it might not be the benefit to do that. It's a negotiation on the best.
That is our goal and what we have communicated in this area here to underground what we can, and then we talked about some of the lines going up to Angel Peak. Those would be hardened, meaning instead of having uninsulated conductor, we would insulate those. We would replace all the poles with ductile iron or steel poles that could withstand actually the weight of a tree falling on it. So that's the initial plan, but you know, just keep in mind these costs are could be quite high, right? So we have to do cost benefit. These are open to public comment and utility commission approval. So because these costs are socialized, you can imagine that there could be some interveners that don't live here on the mountain that want to shield themselves from, you know, high dollar projects. So it's that balance we're going through. We're trying to find the best solution forward. Looking at the cost benefit.
My recollection of the conversations, and there were several different meetings, was that the cost of undergrounding these communities up here would go statewide. It wouldn't be just.
That's correct.
You're correct.
Okay. And then the question I have is, does your proposal to the PUC going to say that, or are they just going to say? Yeah, one day we might want to.
No. It's broken down to this section here for undergrounding, or this type, this line here. This is what we could do: option A, underground; option B, harden it by doing this. And this is the time frame it could do. And then we'll prioritize. You know, what section gets done first based on the decision.
But you guys aren't prioritizing.
On the sections that we did that already. The tier areas, so we started prioritizing. Situational awareness is what we're calling it, and proactive management. And so what we did is we, Mount Charleston is in tier 3. So we took sections of the state and analyzed where's the high fire danger and what's the risk. And so we have tier 3, which is Mount Charleston and Tahoe Basin, and then we have tier 2, which will be kind of like areas that are on the boundary of timber area, heavy population, heavy thick brush and pinyon mix, and then we'll have elevated tier 1 areas, which is going to be more of the low-lying areas with the sagebrush, flashy fuels, cheatgrass, the Elko, Winnemucca areas of Reno and Sparks area. So we did prioritize the areas of focusing on changing our inspections, prioritizing what gets done first. So we did do that so far. On the project-wise, it does get prioritized on permitting. We have to look at all that stuff too. So areas that we can move through the system faster on studies, permitting and stuff, and we can get those accomplished, we look at that. We'll submit, and it could take us, you know, 5 to 10 years to get through a permit process if we're relocating a line, getting all the studies done and the permitting and stuff.
So this is where some of the public comment, you know, at these meetings certainly does help, right? I mean, those comments are looked at, reviewed, and do take some priority.
The chief, go ahead.
Do you have a written plan?
Yes. So
is
that's
there
what,
any possibility so that's, of getting a copy of that so we can...
So right now we're in the phase of collecting the comments and sections.
I just think it's difficult to give you feedback on a plan if I can't read the plan.
Well, we're going to go through the process of this is the highlighted areas. This is what we have so far in the plan, developing the plan, and then we'll be rolling out after we collect everyone's input. Then we're going to develop the plan by collecting. You know, okay, I want to make sure. You guys focus on undergrounding up here. So we need to have that input in order to develop that plan based off those comments. So we have to collect those comments first before we finalize the plan.
But going underground was not our idea, it was your idea.
It's one of the options.
And now you're saying that it's our idea and we need to talk.
Well,
about
no, I'm saying a public comment. So certain areas we're
public
getting back.
Public comment is not, it wasn't our comment. It was you guys.
Right.
At four different meetings said we're putting Mount Charleston underground in the next 5 years. And now you sound, I don't know you, I don't mean to be rude, like you're backpedaling.
No. What we're trying to do is we're going to go through the plan of the different options. We're going to go through our fuels mitigation. This is what our plan is to do the fuels mitigation work. This is our plan about how we are going to do situational awareness. We're purchasing and installing weather stations, 30 of them throughout the state. We're collecting fire mapping, where we're actually going to be flying over and collecting the data on the fuel, on the type of fuel that's out there, the healthy of how healthy the forest is, how healthy, how many tons per acre of cheatgrass is out there. And so we're collecting that data. So that's what we're going to talk about on the plan. And then we're going to talk about our system hardening. This is our options of what we're going to do, and this is how we're analyzing the cost benefit to it. And are we on the right path, or are we not on the right path? That's what the public comment section will be, is, okay, no, we don't want you guys to focus on underground. We want to do this. So those are the public comments, and we can build the plan off the comments of, hey, these are our key areas we're focused on, and if you guys agree with this or don't agree with this, or if you guys want us to focus on something else.
One of the questions I have, it seems like the power outages that we've had in the past are the supply line, not so much the residential neighborhoods. So I'm thinking that because you guys kind of have a road for that power line, it would be very easy to go underground. But coming up in the neighborhoods, we have trees and roots, none of our streets are straight. Who the hell knows where the right-of-ways are? So I'm thinking that personally, the priority would be getting the main power up. And my question, I guess, is that when we have had power outages, my recall is it's been issues with the power line coming to the residents, the neighborhoods, not the neighborhoods.
Yeah, a lot of the recent ones, Angel Peak is the primary supply down. Actually, it's the only supply down
right
to the valley. So yeah, we've had some issues there. And that outage in October, that was really to address a lot of those concerns and issues.
But when I first moved up here in 96, when the power went out, we didn't even discuss it. We just started doing what we did because it happened so often. So you guys are doing a good job.
And I appreciate that. And you know, one thing to highlight since that big outage, right, there was a couple of days where there were good snowstorms.
There's been
a couple of days with 40 plus mile an hour.
It was before Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Four days.
So the system performed very well since that time, which was the expected outcome.
But the good news is you guys are being proactive. There's a plan. We're moving forward. We're going to do something. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And it gets updated every year. So if it's, we don't like it, we're, you know, yeah, something needs to be changed.
Yeah.
One thing just to kind of make clear, we're required by the Senate bill to submit our plan on March 1st, but that plan at that point is not a done approved plan. It goes open for public comment.
For 180 days.
So that's the opportunity you'll be able to get the plan, kind of digest it, go through it in detail, and provide comments. So that'll be 180 days.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. So we want the public comments to build the plan, and then we submit the plan to the PUC, and then it's open for the public to review it. And then that's what the 180-day review period is, to actually get the public comment on the plan. But our goal is to actually take the input from the public to address those concerns prior to us developing the whole plan.
Okay.
I understand you improved the road that goes to Angel Peak, but I was curious, have the criteria changed since that meeting at the hotel with regard to wind speed, with regard to vegetation dryness? The criteria thresholds, have they changed since that meeting?
Not since we established.
That's correct. They're the same. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, we're looking at, you know, when the ERC, energy release component of the fuels, is above the 92nd percentile,
mm-hmm,
and then when we're seeing the fire weather index above 60, and then wind gusts, if we're seeing forecasting above 45.
And all three have to be in place,
correct,
before you cut power,
yeah,
not just one.
And it's important to know, just because all three are in place, that's a very quantitative metric, and we look at that. If all three of those are satisfied, we do an additional evaluation where we were close, actually, last year, to be honest, and, you know, we made some calls. Part of the additional process is you got the quantitative, we do a qualitative, where we'll do inspections of our lines days in advance of the weather forecasts. We'll coordinate with the chief up here. We'll ask him, you know, what is his concerns or opinions, the Forest Service. So that did happen, but it's important to know it's just not the weather forecast that drives the decision.
Right.
It's also other stakeholders.
But that, what did happen on that, though, some things have changed on it, is the same data there, but if it's getting close, we go to weekly. How often we sample the fuels is on a weekly basis now during the fire season. So we're sampling that on a weekly basis. If it gets to the point where we're getting close, we're going to be doing it on a daily basis. So we're getting up-to-date information. We're adding additional weather stations so we can collect that data and analyze that. So that has changed and improved, so we're actually getting up-to-date information and the latest.
One last question. If I understood it correctly at the time, and this goes to the question that this gentleman was asking, in that 3 to 5 years to vary the lines in the residential areas, am I correct in remembering that you have the approval to do that? It's just a question whether you want to do it or not. You have the approval, is that correct?
No, that's not correct. So, unfortunately, our message maybe wasn't clear. Our intent, we feel that would be the most risk-averse to put everything underground, right? That would eliminate a lot of the risk. However, that is subject to approval by our Utilities Commission. Right, they have to balance all customers, not just Mount Charleston customers. So that was always the concern. That it was our goal, because that is the most risk-averse solution, but knowing that it is subject for review and approval and public comment, that it could change that.
What's your projected timeline to get through the whole process? March 1st, then 6 months for comment, gets us to the end of August. Is this going to be out this time next year, PUC will approve, or do you have a guesstimate estimate?
We're assuming that they'll get approval in August time frame, you know, we're thinking will come out. And then we'll have to submit any updates to the plan in September of the next year. So it'll be out for a year and we'll make any adjustments and stuff. But we're not going to be waiting for it to get approval in August, like I stated earlier. We've already made those changes. Okay. We're already looking at, you know, we have already bumped up our inspection program. We've already done a lot of additional repairs. We're beefing up our fuels mitigation work. A lot more, you know, tree trimmers you're seeing up here. Now we're also gonna be bumping up, removing the fuels around the base of the poles. We call it grubbing the poles. Contracting out with fire agencies and additional contractors to this summer to do this work and beef it up before the plan's even approved.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you very much. Receive a report from Clark County. Megan.
Uh-huh.
Clark County. That's what it says.
I don't have much for you.
Excuse me.
All right. So the license plate grants are open. It opened at the beginning of the year. That's our cycle every year. It opens beginning of January, but I haven't been here to tell you, so it's open. I'll put it on the Facebook page. We're going to reach out to all the people who've gotten grants in the past couple of years to remind them that it's open. There's $90,000 in the account this year. So we're going to ask the applicants or the recipients from last year to come to the February meeting next month to give updates on their projects. And then we'll hear, assuming everything goes as planned, we will hear the new grant applications, we'll hear their presentations at the March meeting. That's the plan. Backcountry Horsemen is one of the groups that received the grant to do work on the Bristlecone Trail. And I imagine they'll give you an update, but I'll give you a real quick little update on what is going on with them. On October 6th, they were heading up the trail. They had parked at the trailhead to head up the trail to do work. And someone with a drone started chasing the horses and did not let up. And even the best of horses, when it's pursued and not stopped, will run. And Terry Jones, who has been here several times to represent them with a white beard, He was thrown from his horse. And I'll tell you, he ended up with significant. A fractured rib, a fractured shoulder blade, a fractured L1 vertebrae, 6 staples in his head. Mm. He's okay now, but it was very scary. After he got thrown, the drone went back and started again with the other horses at the trailhead. So it's very scary. So if you know anything, happen to know anything about that, yeah.
Yeah, can you get the county to rescind the law and making it so it's not illegal to shoot down drones?
I don't think that's a county law. I think that's either state or federal. I don't think we say anything about drones. So that was October 6th, and they're working on their grant project. October 17th, less than 2 weeks later, Jim Sage, who is called Big Jim, he was the big guy that was here with them last year. He was, I got to read this because it's, they were working on a steep mountainside, 11,000 feet. While trying to drag a log around a switchback, his mule lost its footing and flipped over backwards down a near rock scree. So basically, went end over end, the horse and the mule landed on Jim, and the horn punctured his sternum. He's very lucky to be alive. The mule continued rolling and cartwheeling down the mountain for nearly 2,000 feet.
Oh, God.
The mule did not make it, but Jim is okay, and he's back in the saddle. So, so it's just unbelievable that something could happen, but just know they are putting their heart and soul into that grant and doing the work that you guys gave them money to do. So, pretty remarkable. All of us that ride, and full disclosure, I'm a member of this group. All of us that ride, it kind of makes us think a little bit, you know, about what we do. So, anyway, that's really all I have.
Thank you, Megan.
Any questions for me? Yes.
You said the last year's grant recipients will report on what they did in the February meeting. Is that correct?
We will ask them to be here. Hopefully every one of them can send someone, but yeah, we put the request out for them to come and report.
Thank you.
The only utility boxes I've seen that are painted are coming down the backside of Echo, going up to the water tank.
They're all done.
Check out the visitor center.
They're the visitor center. They're coming up. They are right over here. As you're turning to go to the lodge.
You got a map?
I do not have a map on me, and then the other ones are at Echo. So
when you're driving,
there were 4 locations, and those are the 4.
Okay, I'll
try to see. So they finished. I don't know what he's looking at. They finished them right before it snowed, and we were going to have a big ceremony and unveiling thing, and it just. Timing didn't work out, plus I didn't have to be there, but I was out on leave for quite a while. So we are going to wait till it's a little nicer out and they're not covered in snow and have a little reception and unveiling, you know, unveiling with the artists and everything.
I will attend. You're going to MC.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, one other thing, I hate to even bring this up because it's very unpleasant. So this year, the county had made a decision to discontinue plowing in Old Town. The roads that we don't own and do not and should not be maintaining, we decided to only plow when school was in session, because that's a big part of the reason we plow is to allow safe access to the school. You know, every decision you make, there's consequences it came to our attention that that was maybe compromising safety in some way. So the decision was made to continue plowing this year. But as we've talked about before multiple times, the county does not own that road, does not own any roads in Old Town, and has no responsibility or right to be on that road. It's a liability every time we do something on that road. So I think most people here know who the owner of the road is. Mm-hmm. I would urge everybody to come together and talk to that owner to take responsibility for the road that they own. If this were a road in town that's a private road, because that's what it is, it's a private road, the owner would take care of it. Usually that's an HOA. So we're looking at our plans for how we're going to proceed. This is a really unpleasant situation. There's no good answer. Mm-hmm. It's not that we don't want to provide service to our residents, to taxpayers, but we're also doing a disservice to other taxpayers by creating liability every time we drive a giant piece of equipment down a road that we're not supposed to be on. So we're looking into it, looking at different options. So if you heard about it, that's what's going on. It's not a pleasant situation, and I hate to bring it up, but it's we're working on it. Yes.
I'm glad you brought it up. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
I don't like bringing up these things, but
I know you're looking into it, and the legalities of it we won't discuss here. But it's a very tense situation within Old Town.
I know. I've gotten many phone calls about it. And one thing I will share with you is, and I think I shared this a little bit, there's a lot of roads. I cover 6 different rural communities with town boards and 10 communities total. The vast majority of the roads in the community, the rural communities that I serve, are county-owned roads that are not maintained by the county. So the road I personally live on, if there were to be a flood, get washed out, I am responsible to fix that. The county does not maintain it because it's never been brought up to county standards. So it's really hard for us, for the county, to explain to people who don't get their roads maintained that they're maintaining a road that we don't even own. It's not equitable. So, like I said, it's a very tense situation, and we're going to try to find a good solution.
So if the owner closes the road, how are they going to get to the school?
Well, closing the road is not an option that's on the table for
him. He owns it.
He owns it, but I'm telling you, it's there is no winning in this situation. This is a very unpleasant situation, and if somebody has the perfect solution, let me know.
But it is a road, a legal road, right? And the public has access to that road based on use over a period of time, historical use, right?
That would have to be adjudicated.
I think what you're saying is true, but the county still has an obligation to maintain the road. You know, that goes back to the days of England where the commoners would cross the Lord's land. So, yeah, there is access. But,
right.
Yeah, if the guy that owns it privately said, I'm closing it, then, yeah, he would have that right. But just repeating a little history, the owner before, the current owner, wanted to donate to Clark County, but the residents had to agree to the right-of-ways as they existed because, as we know, you know, here's the road and here's somebody's property. And Old Town had to be 100% or the county wouldn't take it. They would maintain it.
Yeah.
But there were some holdouts out there that wouldn't give up their little points into the road, so the county just walked away from it. So it's a huge quagmire. I mean, it's been attempted, and again, to get 100% cooperation out of any group of people, it's not going to happen. No.
Right. Yeah.
No. So it's unfortunate, and I think, Megan, the background was that they were just plowing the road. So the people in the background went, hey, why aren't you doing ours? And then, of course, that's when the county looked at it and went under the microscope and went, we're not
even
supposed to be doing it.
There's many factors into the decision that was made this year. A lot of it has to do with, we're on this road, and if there were to be, if that plow were to cause a problem, we should be on that road.
Right.
You know, I mean, so,
no, I agree
so
with
our
that.
Poor driver is like, oh my goodness. So,
yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I'm saying that, but before, they were just doing it, and nobody in legal looked at it. And then when they were complaining, and legal looked at it, then it all went away.
Sometimes
so.
when complaints come in, it brings up things that.
Yeah.
I
don't know if there's ever going to be an answer.
I don't either. But
yeah.
The answer, I don't think the answer can be that the county is going to continue to do it forever on a road that we're not supposed to be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
Next item is planning and zoning. We have none. A general business review of the 2020 meeting schedule, make changes for possible action.
Oh, that's nice. So I printed the calendar to share with you, and it's sitting on the printer in the government center, so that's really helpful. So I'm sorry. It's the color printer. I have to go a different way, and I went the wrong way. So next year, your schedule is okay all up until November. It's always the same way. November, you are on Thanksgiving Day. In December, it is New Year's Eve. So my suggestion would be to cancel both of those meetings. And if a need arises to have a meeting, we can always have a meeting if someone were to come up.
All right. Well, then what I would suggest is we'll go ahead with that suggestion, and then we can review it again next month.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Representative from the 2020 census will share information about upcoming census, including employment opportunities. Discussion only.
Hi there.
Yeah.
This is cool. Hi, my name's Susan Reed. Do you guys need my address?
No, you're fine.
I'm Susan Reed, and I'm from the 2020 census. I gave you all folders with lots of cool information. On the left-hand side, it's information all about the census. Your first sheet basically tells you everything you need to know, including your information is secure. We don't share anything, personal identifiable information. Your name and address is hidden away for 78 years. Ancestry.com or anybody else won't know who lives where for at least that long. The second part is all about how we are going to be responding this time. We have technology now and we're going to use it. You can respond online, secure website, over the phone, secure phone, or through the mail, U.S. Postal Service, your little card. Some people, of course, have those long forms. That's just the address. Picked at random by a computer. It's nothing personal. And about addresses. The government, that's 2020 census, the census does not know who lives at an address until the address tells you. Okay? The address tells us who lives there. If an address does not respond, that's when we have the follow-up response people, the enumerators, everybody, the census takers. That is who we are currently begging for more people to come work for us now in those positions. And yeah, they get $18 an hour, and their supervisors, who we also need, get paid more because they're supervisors. We hire local. Everybody works local in your neighborhood because you know your neighborhood, you know your roads. It's, we don't want to send Boulder City people up to Mount Charleston to try to find every little town and every little house, and we don't want to send Mount Charleston people down to Boulder City residents to meet. Because they don't know the local roads, they don't know where the gas station is, they don't know where to get lunch. So, you know, everybody works local because it's more efficient that way and people know. All census workers are background checked, credentialed, you know, official badges is, it's cold in here. And fingerprinted, like I said, background checked. So they're safe people. They are not creepy people. We don't hire creepy people.
Well, there goes the community. There goes Dave.
Yes. And they're members of the community, and their vehicles will also be marked with gold.
And who makes that judge?
The background check people, the federal government. It's their background checked. Everybody's background checked. One of those negative plans. You apply online. The hardest part, if you want to apply, the hardest part is of the application is the password. It is one of them passwords. Everything else is just online, and it's not hard. After the password, it's pretty easy. We will be coming back to tell you more updates about what's going on. Census Day is April 1st, 2020. It's always April 1st. You have to be alive and breathing on April 1st. If you die the day before, you don't get counted. If you're born the day after, you don't get counted. But if you are anyway living, breathing, or whatever, on April 1st, you are counted. And you are counted where you normally live. Because, Vegas and areas around are full of snowbirds and stuff. So everybody's like, well, where am I getting counted? Where am I doing? Well, where you are living on that day is where you normally get counted. If you're in the hospital because of an accident or something, you get counted where you normally be living. Homeless people are getting counted by special teams. People in group quarters are getting counted by special teams. average citizens are getting counted through the normal way. Anybody got questions?
No.
Yeah, we got a call.
I have two questions.
Sure.
So the interviews are with people who are citizens and people who are not both?
Every person. Every person gets counted. Citizenship doesn't matter. There are many people in Southern Nevada from all over the world for various reasons. We just count all the living, breathing humans. And since all of the information is not shareable amongst other agencies, as far as personal identifiable information, so Joe Brown at 123 West 6th Street, Las Vegas, with his however many kids, dogs, and whatnot, all we know is that a guy and whoever, what they identify as and particular ages, lives at that house. It's all statistical data. In your pages, like 50 ways census data is used, that's the data. It's all data. Whoever you are, wherever you live, nobody will know. The census won't tell anybody for at least 70 years. 78 years. A long, long time. We'll all be dead.
That's depressing.
Well, let's, you know, our other page in here, the green sheet, talks about why you need to be counted, why it's so important. Funding for so many programs. The library, the roads, the schools, hospitals. The data is used because...
Grants.
Grants. There's like a whole list in there, big, giant list. Every human in Nevada is worth $26,000 in stuff. You had a question?
That was just all I was going to ask, is if Megan might be able to share with us on something that if we need, for example, extra money for fire protection up here, if people all answer the census, that could help, I'm taking it?
Yes.
I imagine so. Population has a lot to do with a lot of funding. And if there's higher population, more federal funds can come to Nevada that are open to us to use. So, yes.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what you would find if you look up 89124 and the data is collected and how it's all broken down.
Yeah.
It's always good to get a good count.
Yes. Because if people don't get counted, if we have a low count, it's not that, oh, you didn't get counted, we aren't going to come to your house, and, you know, you don't get any soup. No, everybody else gets less soup. There's less coverage, there's less money for the forestry department, there's less money for Nevada Highway Patrol, there's less money for Metro and the fire department, and, you know, the school.
Okay.
The school can't plan because it doesn't know how many kids. The hospitals and whatnot can't plan because they don't know how many... You know, people that they're serving, they can't, like, we might get another hospital in the Northwest.
So it's important that everybody answer.
It's important that everybody answers. And don't be afraid because, you know, secure. Nobody's ever hacked the Department of Commerce.
Yeah. Oh, no. Anyway, any other questions? Nope. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you are legally required to respond, aren't you?
It is in Article 1 of the Constitution that everybody should be counted. Nobody's going to come and arrest you, but if
we'll have
you,
to get Schumer's opinion.
Yeah, but if you if people are violently hostile to a census worker, we will call the marshals or Metro or whoever, because you know it's against the law to harm people. Yeah, and our workers are polite and considerate and caring. That's part of the training.
Okay.
And I'll come back and keep you guys updated with any new stuff because we're always getting new. Talking points and data sheets for you.
Do we get those really neat key fobs?
I can bring bling. I'm a recruiter,
for you,
so my bling consists of builders, but the partnership people can. I can ask for bling from the partnership people. And FYI, you guys are in a census tract that is very large geographically. Your census tract goes all the way from Mountain Springs, way down in the south. Blue Diamond, town of Blue Diamond, Kyle Canyon, Lee Canyon, and half of Cold Creek.
Wow.
Do we get Indian Springs?
No.
Indian
no.
Springs is their own. Is their
no,
own.
I'm kidding. Okay.
Just as well.
Yeah, it's good. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, the next up is the comments by the general public, and we need to limit the comments to 3 minutes. Anybody have a public comment? Okay. All right, having none, the next meeting date is February 27th, 2020, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay. February 27th. Isn't that weird now on our checks we have to write 2020? So, yeah, so nobody can manipulate.
Right.
Didn't take them long to figure that out.
I
we live in a crazy world, that's all I'm saying.
Good night, Brian.
Have a good evening.
Hey, Joe.
Thanks for letting me know about it.
Hey, Joe.
I was not there.
Yeah, no, it'll commercialize.
He's looking pretty avant-garde, let me tell you.
Yeah. You know, I'll really be impressed when you get matching colors.
I gotta grow some first.
Hilarious. And when my husband goes out to the beach, he comes from and he gets to move and it's hilarious.
It's been like a living in the valley and